Now we're holding on page Gimel in Eidovin Oisei. We're in the middle of a number of statements by Rabbi Yumia ben Elazar. The first one had to do with something with our parak that talks about diumdin. So therefore, we talk about du partsofim, and then we had a couple of others. So now more. Va'omer Rabbi Yumia ben Elazar. You say only part of the praise of a person in his presence, but you can say all of it when he's not present. Because we find when Hashem is speaking to Noach, he says, I saw that you're a tzaddik before you're a tzaddik before me in this generation. So Hashem only calls him a tzaddik. Describes him as not only tzaddik but also tum. So therefore, we see so it's different when he's being spoken to personally versus not. In fact, Etz Yosef points out not only do you have that when Hashem is speaking to him directly, he doesn't use tumim, but also when he says bader hazeh implies only in this generation are you such a tzaddik, whereas bader yosef then you have. The fact of the matter is that we have the famous thing. Rashi says Yesh Doshin L'Gnai and Yesh L'Shvach. But the fact is, you have Deroysev of Noach. Etz Yosef points out includes at the one end you have Mesu Shelach, who was a great tzaddik, and he passed away in the year of the Mabul when Noach was 600. At the end of Noach's life, you have Odom Rishon, who was 58 when Noach passed away. So Deroysev is more of a praise to him that in those generations also he's considered a tzaddik. Whereas Badur Hazeh is a lesser thing. So therefore, we see that also. Now, why taka should that be? Why should it be so that you say only Mitzvah Shvach is a fun of and Kulo Shal is a fun of? So Rashi says, because if you say the whole Shvach in his presence, then it looks like you're chanfening him. It looks like you're flattering him, like you're buttering him up because you want to get something out of him. Maushra says a different reason. Another reason might be because you don't want the person himself to become a Baal Gai. Now, the difference is, though, we do find that the Medrash says that even by Hashem, we don't say we only say Mikta Shvacha b'fanav. So the part about becoming a Baal Gaiva obviously is not relevant there, but the part about that it makes it look as though you're doing it just in order to get something out of Hashem, that would be relevant also, and therefore that concept would apply when you're speaking to Hashem also. So, Vomer of Yumi ben Elazar, rather, my dichtiv, further on, the story of the Mabul, Vihine Ale Zayas Torah Fafiha. When the dove came back the second time, when Noach sent it out, so it says it came back with an olive leaf torn off in its mouth. Now, the simple meaning Rashi explains on the Pasuk is that Torah means that the leaf was torn off. But the Gemara is doubtioning rather that the word taraf is related to food, and Rashi points out on the pasuk, "Bafia" means there was a message in her mouth, meaning "Omra Yoina Lefnei Hakadosh Baruch Hu." That it means the dove, by in effect, is saying to Hashem, "Ribono Shel Olam, Yum is a nice maroon kazayis, Yum is surin biyadcha. Better let my food be bitter, like be bitter like an olive." And Tosfos mentions specifically what we mean is it's not so much the olive itself is bitter, there is that, but more that the olive leaves are bitter, which is why therefore Dafke brought a leaf. At least they should be given over, but they should be given over into your hand that I receive my food directly from you, Hashem. Rather than them being sweet like honey, and they should depend on they should be given over to a boss of a dumb. So in other words, in effect, the dove is saying, as much as Noach has been taking excellent care of me in the teva, I would much rather be having my food directly from Hashem. So in fact, on the psukim over there, Rashi brings this drosha. And he said that the drosha is based on the fact, again, that the Chachamim are taking the word Torah to mean food, and Befiha mean that the message is in her mouth, meaning that she's saying that. The Ramban argues on that and points out that maybe the drosha is more based on the fact that specifically why would the Torah have to mention that it was an olive leaf? Why couldn't it just say she brought a leaf? And that would be enough to tell Noach that the water was receding. The Mizrahi in turn points out over there that there were actually two different drushas. There's the one in the Gemara over here, and the same drusha is also brought in Sanhedrin, which is that the dove is speaking to Hashem. Then you have, though, in the Medrash, that the dove is giving a message to Noach. So those are two different things. The fact that she's bringing an olive leaf, that has to be, Noach can't tell what the bird is thinking, so therefore it has to actually bring back a leaf, specifically an olive leaf, and from that he should realize what it's hinting at, as opposed to Hashem doesn't need that, and it's enough for the dove to just be saying that without even bringing anything at all. So that's what the dove is symbolizing with this, with bringing an olive leaf. So the Gemara says, "My mashman dahai teref lishna de bezoniu." Where do we see that the word toref refers to food? So k'siv hacha toref b'fiya, because here we're saying that the leaf was toref in her mouth. We find that Shlomo HaMelech says to Hashem, "Give me my hatrifeni, the same shorosh toref, the bread that's apportioned to me." So we see the same idea. In fact, Maharsha points out over there in Sanhedrin, he refers over here to his pirush over there. Now, why doesn't the Gemara bring? You have lots of psukim where you find that teref means food. Teref nosam liyureyav, and many other psukim like that. But the point is, here we have specifically where Shlomo is making the same request that the dove did hundreds of years earlier, saying, "Hashem, please give me my food directly, rather than having to depend on a boss of a dove." And after all, this is, Maharsha points out, this is what we say in benching, boss of a dove. So yeah. Any house where words of Torah are being heard in it at night, such a house will not be destroyed. Rashi says, specifically we're mentioning the night, because the sound of the Torah that's learned there is more audible by night. The Rambam points out also, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Talmud Torah, that the night is particularly, later on in the Masechta, actually, we have something about it, that the night is particularly conducive to learning. We have a piece later in the Masechta, for example, that says the reason why the moon was created is that there should be light available for people to learn Torah by night. So therefore, the night is a particularly conducive time to learn Torah. And the Rambam phrases that a person should make sure not to waste any of his nights, and then use them for learning. So therefore, so a person does that, Shuvani Nechrav, then his house won't be destroyed. As you have a pasuk, the loy omar ayeh eleka oisai, he did not say, "Where is Hashem who made me?" Noisin zmiras baloyla, who gives songs at night. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is that you're talking about a person, for example, who doesn't realize that he has to search for Hashem and try to be close to Hashem, where zmiras can mean cutting off. Hashem cut off the enemies of the Jewish people by night, like Makas Bechordas and Sancheiriv, and so on and so forth. But here we're dashing that you can have a person might have to say, when a disaster befalls him, such as a fire, he'll have to say, "Where's Hashem? Why didn't he protect me from this disaster?" So he won't have to say that because he's giving forth the songs of Torah at night. So we see from that that when a person does that, he gives forth those songs of Torah at night, then he doesn't have such a disaster happening of his house burning down, such that he would have to complain, "Why didn't Hashem prevent it from happening?" Maharsha points out, if you look where this pasuk is, this is part of Elihu's speech to Eov. So in Sefer Eov, you have all the debates between Eov and his friends. Eventually, his friends give up trying to persuade him. Then comes in Elihu, who spends several chapters speaking to Eov and helping him understand, to try to help him understand how Hashem runs the world. So this is one of the pasukim in one of Elihu's speeches. Now, at the beginning of Sefer Eov, it describes over there how Eov's children would go. They had a round of parties every day. They would have a feast in the house of another one of the children. And then at the end of each round, Eov would be bringing korbanos on their behalf. What if they sinned during that time? So now Elihu is telling Eov, you know what? If instead of at night there would have been divrei Torah in your house rather than your children feasting, then you wouldn't have had this. Then you wouldn't have now where you're complaining why Hashem hasn't helped. So it's not just the Gemara is not even taking the pasuk out of context. It works out in the context of Elihu telling Eov that this is part of why these things happen to you, because you didn't have that protection of Torah. Marsha also asks the question. Now, we know the famous thing. David HaMelech was punished for calling the Torah Zmiros. You have an insota that Hashem tells him, you call it Zmiros. I'm going to make you forget something that even Tanokos Rabbi Rabban know. You have an in Kuntras Achron and in Tanya. The Alter Rebbe analyzes what happened over there and why Dafka, what's wrong with him calling it Zmiros, and why Dafka was made to forget something and so on and so forth. Anyway, the point is, so why are we saying over here, Noisin Zmiros Balola? And the vote is because we're talking about at night, where, like Rashi said, the voice is more audible at distance. Therefore, it's more like a song. So therefore, Elihu can validly be calling it a song, and you don't have the problem of like when David HaMelech called it that. And Ben Yehoyada over here says, in somewhat a similar vein to the way the Alter Rebbe talks about it in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe explains that calling the Torah Zmiris is talking about a more chitzoniistic aspect of Torah. The pnimius of Torah is that it's chochmasu rasonu shalakadosh baruch hu. The chitzoniist of Torah is that it's more, that it's the source of life and energy for all the worlds. So David is focusing only on that part, and that's wrong. But here we're talking about that chitzoniistic level, which has the ability to protect a person's house, then it's appropriate to be calling that in the pasuk. Ion Yaakov points out another point as well. There's a Gemara also in Sota that says that if there's znus in a house, then it causes the house to be destroyed. But if then they learn Torah in that house, then the schus of that learning Torah in the house helps counteract the bad effects of the znus, and therefore it prevents the house from being destroyed where otherwise it might have been. Ever since the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, it's enough for the world to use the name of Hashem of two letters. Meaning, in other words, like this we had when the Beis Hamikdash was standing, then they're in the Beis Hamikdash, they were allowed to pronounce the name Yudke Vavke. Now that the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, we can't do that. But instead, so what part of that, what name of Hashem can we pronounce as written the name Yudke? So therefore, like in effect, it's been cut in half, and we're only able to of any name that's related to Yudke Vavke, the only one that we can use and actually say out is just the name Yudke. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Kol Hanashama Tahala Ka. Every soul should praise Ka, should praise Hashem. Meaning, in other words, because the Shema Mefrodesh is not for Kol Hanashama, it's reserved only for the Kohenim. For example, when they do Birkas Kohenim. So therefore, so we see that other than that, then we can only use the name Yudke. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hananel, another way of understanding it is that we can douse in the word neshama as if it said neshama, which is Meloshin. You find the word neshama here and there in Pesukim in Tanakh, and it means and it means desolation, Meloshin Shmama. So therefore, Kol HaNeshama, when the Beis Hamikdash is desolate and destroyed, then to Haloka, then we can only praise Hashem with the name Yudke. Maharsha points out another thing to connect these two meanings together, neshama and neshama. We know there's the famous Gemara that says in Nida, it's also in Yevamos, that when is Mashiach going to come? When all the neshamas in Guf have been used up. Rashi in those various places explains that Guf is the name of the Oitzer, of the treasury, Lamaila, where all the neshamas are. When all the neshamas are used up from Guf, then Mashiach, then Ben David will come. So therefore, as long as the neshamas are in the guf and they're not, as long as there are still neshamas in guf and they haven't been used up, then to hallow ka, then we can only praise Hashem with ka. After they're all gone, then Mashiach comes, then we'll be able to praise Hashem with the full four-letter name of Hashem. So therefore, there really is a connection between neshama and neshama. V'amr Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar. Niskawal Bavel, Niskawal Shchenel. This we had in Brachas as well. When Bavel was cursed, her neighbors were cursed as well. On the other hand, Niskawal Shomrin, Nisbochu Shchenel. But when Shomrin, the capital of the Aseret HaShvatim, when it was cursed, then the neighboring nations got a bracha out of it. One idea being, in other words, it shows that the punishment for the Jewish people is not quite as the punishment for the Jewish people is not clear. When Hashem punishes Goyish nations, it's because he hates them and wants them destroyed. When Hashem punishes the Jewish people, it's more of a corrective. So therefore, you have a certain bracha in it for the neighbors. So the example, in the scowl above on the scowl of Shechinah is Dichtiv. The Navi Yeshaya describes how Bavel is going to be destroyed. He says, "V'samtiel morash kipod, I will make that Bavel will be the inheritance of kipod, which is some kind of wild animal. There's a few possibilities. In modern Hebrew, kipod means a hedgehog, so it could mean that. The different Meforshim on the Psukim explain different possibilities. It may be some kind, maybe an owl, it may be some other kind of a wild creature, whatever it is. These are noxious creatures, ones that you don't want to tangle with. But agme moyim, and it will be pools of water. So in other words, it's going to be a place full of mosquitoes and malaria and all kinds of unpleasant animals to be around. On the other hand, the skala shomer disbochu shchenel. But when shomer was cursed, then the neighbors got a bracha from it. Dichtiv, the Navi Micha says, "V'samti shomer le'iasada." He says, "I'll make shomer into a heap of wounds in the field, l'matoi korem, to a place where they will plant vineyards." So therefore, so in other words, Rashi says the point is, so with Bavel, you have anybody thinks of Bavel, they're thinking of the dangerous and noxious animals and whatnot that live there, and they want to stay as far away from it. Oy l'rosha, oy l'shchena. As opposed to at least Shomeron, they mention for good. Look at this, it's a place that you can't build houses there anymore because it's destroyed, but you can use it for vineyards, and we're able to get good out of it, and therefore they speak in praise of it. So therefore, so that's the difference. Now, Marsha in Brachas points out, the fact is, it still is a klala because the Jews in Shomeron are still dispossessed from there, and then the surrounding nations take it over. And besides which, better to have houses and places for people to live in Eretz Yisrael rather than just vineyards. As good as a vineyard is, houses are better. You find even in the din of Bar Metzra that we were talking about, we were mentioning Derech Agav the other day, where the din is that if you have one person wants the place in order to build a house there, and the other one wants it in order to use it as a field, then the one who wants for a house takes precedence. So yeah. Tosfos points out now, though, in the Toichacha, you have the expression, in Parshas B'chukosai, you have the expression that the land is going to be desolate. V'shamamu aleha oyveichem. Your enemies will be desolate on it. And Rashi explains over there from Sifra that it means that there's a certain bracha that the goyim will never be able to find comfort and be able to resettle Eretz Yisrael properly. Eretz Yisrael is going to remain desolate until her own children come back to him. As in fact we see the Maisa, you have as recently as 150, 160 years ago, goyim like Mark Twain and other goyim like him visited Eretz Yisrael and commented on how desolate it is and how nobody could ever live. They can't understand how anybody lived there. And then you come nowadays and it's completely transformed. Anyway, so then what are we saying over here that Nisbochu Shcheneha and they have vineyards over there? So Tosfos says, first of all, okay, it means in other words that first of all, who are the neighbors of Shomeron? The Jewish people who live in Yehuda. You have Eretz Yehuda, the south of Eretz Yisrael, and then you have Shomeron as the north of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, Nisbochu Shcheneha means that Jews themselves are benefiting from it. Second of all, fine, even if we mean that means the immediately neighboring Goyim, fine, it means that Eretz Yisrael is still fruitful, just not as much as it was before when it was thickly settled with Jews. Okay. V'amar Rabbi Yirmiya ben Elazar, bo yurei shaloi k'midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu midas basav adam. Come see that the way Hashem does things when a person is punished is not the way that a boss of a dumb does it. Midas boss of a dumb, when a human king is punishing somebody and executing him, nischayim harigol amalchus, if you have somebody who's liable to the death penalty from the government, matil mechaka l'seich piv, they put a chaka into his mouth. A chaka literally means like a fish hook. But Rashi describes it. It means a piece of wood that keeps his mouth open so he can't speak. So they stick that into his mouth, a piece of wood with like sharp ends, so that he can't close his mouth and be able to say anything. So that he doesn't curse the king. Umidas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whereas the way Hashem does, if Hashem decides that a person needs to be punished with death, shoysik, then the person is quiet. He doesn't dare to curse out Hashem. Marsha says there's a reason behind it. When you get down to it, when a person is convicted by a melech bas of adam, there's always the question: did he really judge him fairly? So there's always the possibility that there was bias over there. Second of all, why shouldn't he try to curse the king? What does he have to lose? What can the king do to him after he's dead? So the maximum he can do is kill him, and he's doing that anyway. Whereas with Hashem, it's not like that. First of all, everybody knows that Hashem is completely fair. And second of all, he knows that Hashem can still continue to punish him after he dies. So therefore he's quiet and he doesn't complain and then curse Hashem. So therefore Hashem doesn't have to prevent him from speaking. In fact, Shanema, as the Pasuk says, L'chod dumi yosehila, as the Pasuk says, to you, Hashem, silence is praise. Not only that, the person realizing that Hashem judged him fairly praises Hashem for what he did. Shanema, Tehila, because the Pasuk says, L'chod dumi yosehila, for you, silence is praise. So the person is silent from cursing out or criticizing Hashem. And in fact, Tehila, he praises Hashem that he realizes that he was right. Not only that, it counts. The person realizes, Rashi explains, he realizes that Yisurim are good for him and he accepts them ba'ava as if he brought a korban. Shenemar, as that same pasuk continues, Yishulam neder, to you, Hashem, a neder will be paid off. A neder typically means a korban, so that represents, in other words, that these Yisurim count to him as he feels as though they were a korban. What's the idea? Marshall says that after all, when a person brings a korban, part of the idea behind a person bringing a korban, and the korban is shechted, and the skin is stripped off, and it's cut off, and so on and so forth. Part of the idea, Rishonim explain, I think Ben Ramban explains, but other Rishonim also talk about that the idea is that the Sefer Achinuch talks about that the person feels to himself as though he deserves all of this to happen to him because of his Averus, and Hashem has Rachmanus and allows an animal to substitute for him. So now, when he actually is liable to the death penalty, he himself is the kapara for himself. So therefore, that's a l'chol yishulam neder. He realizes that he's accomplishing that what's going on with him is accomplishing a kapara for himself. So v'hainu d'omer Rabbi Shur ben Levi, this also fits with what Rabbi Shur ben Levi says. He says that my dichtiv uvde be'emek habocha mayin yishisu v'gamer. Posuk says those who travel through the valley of bocha. The simple meaning Rashi explains on the pasuk is that bocha is a type of tree, bochoyim, and in English it's called mulberries. So people who go through a valley that has those trees, or just a valley that's called bocha, or whatever mayin yishisu, they make it into a spring. And the pasuk finishes off gam brachas yata moda. It's covered with the brachas of moda, the uli rain, like yoro malkush. So now the Gemara is darshining though in a different sense. Oivrei eber bnei adam sheoivrim aratzonis shemokim. The first word oivrei refers to people who are over on what Hashem says to do. Emek. So then the pasuk continues. They travel through. They're over, and they end up in Emek, the valley. That means Shema Mikim Lahem Gehenim, means that Gehenim is made deeper for them. Because of their averus, they deserve to be in the bottom levels of Gehenim. Habocha, and the positive with the word habocha means meloshin crying. Sheboichin meridin demois kimayin shoshisin. They cry and they shed tears and when the positive continues, mayan yishisuhu. So we're darshining, mayan means a spring, and yishisuhu, the Gemara is darshining, as being related to the shisin, which are the cavities under the mizbeach, where the nesachim were poured onto the mizbeach. The nesachim of wine and water were poured on the mizbeach, and they drained down off the mizbeach into the shisin, into cavities that were dug deep underground. And the Gemara mentions in Sukkah that these shisin, the shisin went thousands of amos below ground. David HaMelech dug them out. You have the whole story over there. So now these people are crying or shedding enough tears to fill up the spring the size of the shisin. So Marsha points out, now that's also, though, it's to their credit. It means, in other words, that those tears also count the same way as we said the person himself is the korban. The tears count as the nesachim that go with the korban. So therefore, so you have a complete korban over there. And in fact, Hashem accepts those to you. Shouted Moris Loninalu. So that's the Uvir Be'emek Habocha Mayin Yishisuhu. And when the Pasuk finishes off, Gam Brochas Yata Moda, when it finishes off, also the Moda is covered and cloaked with Brochas. That means we're darshaning Moda Meloshin the teacher, meaning Shematzdikim Aleim Asadin. People who undergo that, they justify Hashem's justice against them. And they say to Hashem, right there in Gehenim, Rebbeinu Shalom, Yofed Danta, Yofed Zikisa, Yofed Chiyavta. You judged beautifully, you judged correctly. You were mezake, you exonerated those who you exonerate beautifully. Yofed Chiyavta, you condemned validly and beautifully those who you condemned. Yofed Tikanta, Gehenim L'Rashayim, Gan Eden L'Tzadikim, and you set up beautifully Gan Eden for the Gehenim for the Rashayim, Gan Eden for the Tzadikim. So they recognize that Hashem did everything correctly. Why all these extra expressions, Yofed Danta, Yofed Zikisa, etc.? Ben Yehoyada points out there's a Gemara in Chagiga that tells us, Marshal refers to it all over the place, so we've had it a number of times already. There's a Gemara in Chagiga that says every person to begin with has a chelik in Gan Eden and a chelik in Gehenna. What happens? A tzaddik doesn't need his chelik in Gehenna. He needs only a chelik in Gan Eden. So his chelik in Gehenna is given to a Rosha who deserves it. On the other hand, the Rosha should have had a chelik in Gan Eden, and he ends up forfeiting it, and the tzaddik ends up getting a double portion, his and somebody else's. So Ben Yoyada relates the expression over here when he says, Yofa Zikisa, Yofa Chiyavda, and Tikanta Gehenna L'Roshoyim, and so forth, that it refers to this. Not only that you judged each person fairly and gave them what they deserve in Gan Eden or Gehenna, but you even gave them the extra portion in the respective place, depending on what they did. So we're saying that the Rishoyim in Gehenim realized what they did wrong, and they're matzik aleinus hadin, and they justify Hashem's justice against them. So the question is, Aini, is that so? Didn't Rishlokish say that the Rishoyim don't do tshuva even when they're by the entrance of Gehenim? Shenema, as it says in Yeshaya, we have an aftorah of Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, the Yotzu V'ro, they will go out and see when they come, but the previous pasuk says, V'hoyim midi Chodesh v'chodesh, midi Shabbos v'shabbatai, everybody's going to come to the Mismikdash, the Yotzu V'ro, they're going to go out and see, figure out how Noshim HaPoshim be, the dead bodies of the people who have sinned, who have deliberately sinned against me, Poshea means that they rebelled against Hashem, so Shaposhu B'lo Nema, now it doesn't say that who did sin against me, but rather, means even now, when as the pasuk continues, the wombs on them are never going to die, the fire on them is never going to go out, and still they're poshim, as in right now they're sinning. So we see that that's what Rosh Lakish is saying. Even when they're al pischa shel Gehenim, they're at the entrance to Gehenim, which is where you can see them. Marashah points out where you're going to see. You're not going to see them deep down in Gehenim. You're going to see them when you're passing by the entrance to Gehenim. And we're still saying that they don't do tshuva, and they're still poshim right now. They're still sinners. So what's the deal? The answer is Vaikasha, kind of poshi Yisrael, kind of poshi over to Kavim. It depends. Before we were talking about Jewish poshim, they recognize when Hashem was fair and judged them fairly, as opposed, so we can't call them poshim now that they're in Gehenim. On the other hand, the Umas Olam, they never recognize that even in Gehenim, they still continue to be poshea against Hashem. In fact, Marashah points out, actually, there are certain types of Rishoyim that it talks about, the Gemara talks about in Rosh Hashanah, that they have a long-term stay in Gehenim. They are Minim, Apikursim, Mosrim, and then several other groups that it mentions over there. So then we could be saying that we're talking about them also, that they remain in Gehenim, and maybe they're not Chozer B'Tshuva over there either, but the regular run-of-the-mill Jews who may wind up in Gehenim for a period of time, they at least do Tshuva over there. They're not Poshim while they're there in Gehenim. So the Gemara says, Hochi Nami Mistabra, it has to be logical to say that there's a difference between Jewish poshim and goyish ones. Because if you're going to say that even Jews wind up in Gehenim and stay there for a long time, and you're going to say that Hanoshim HaPoshim be, who stay long term in Gehenim and Telatim Loisomus and so forth, if you were going to say that it refers to Jews, Kasha de Rishlokish, Ad de Rishlokish, then you would wind up, Rishlokish would be contradicting himself. Because the same Rishlokish who says that Rishoyim Afil Al Pischa Shog Gehenim and never do tshuva, but to Amr Rishlokish, Rishlokish says to begin with, Poshe Yisrael Ein Ur Shog Gehenim Shabbat Es Behen. The fire of Gehenim cannot have any power over Poshe Yisrael. He says you can make a Kavachomer from the Mizbeach HaZahav in the Mishkan and the Mismikdash. The Mizbeach HaZahav is made out of wood and plated with gold. The gold plating is only the thickness of a gold dinner, which is not that much. And Omad Kamashanim Ve'en Ur Shaletesvay, and yet it lasts, it's lasted for many years, and the fire never dominated and never burnt through the gold and never attacked the wood underneath. Poshi Yisrael, Shein Malin, Mitzvahs Kerimen. Well then, Poshi Yisrael, who are as full of mitzvahs as a pomegranate, Shein Nehmar, as the Pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, Kefelach HaRimon Rakosech, your Rakosech, your temples of on the sides of your head, are like a slice of pomegranate. But Omer of Shim Ben Lakish, and the same Rish Lakish tells us, Al Tikri Rakosech, Ela Rei Kosech, don't read Rakosech, your temples, but Rekosech, your empty ones, meaning Shafilu Rekonin Shabach Blain Mitzvahs Kerimen, even the empty Jews are still as full of mitzvahs as a pomegranate, Allah's Kamakama, how much more so that the fire of Gehenna cannot have any control over them. Tosfos points out that at the end of Chagiga, the Gemara brings this, but the Gemara then makes a different Kavachoyma over there, that Tamid Chachamim are not affected by the fire of Gehenna, and the Gemara makes a Kavachoyma over there from the Salamandra, which is a type of reptile that lives, that grows, that's born and lives in fire, and the blood of it makes a person impervious to fire. We find, for example, it's the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that Chizkiyahu, whose mother smeared that on him before his father was gonna have him go through the avodah of Moloch over there. So Tosfos says the Poshi Yisrael will be affected to a certain extent by the fire of Gehenna. Their faces will be blackened by it, as the Gemara says, as the Gemara mentions in Rosh Hashanah. The Tamei Chachamim, on the other hand, are like the Salamandra; they're not affected by it at all. Now there's a sicha. Actually, there's a sicha. I think in Chelik Yud Zayin, or I don't remember. Maybe Chelik Chafalof. I don't remember actually what Chelik is in. But where the Rebbe analyzes this in connection with a siyum on Masechta Chagiga, and the Rebbe explains over there the difference is Tamid Chachamim. Their whole mitzios is Torah. Therefore, they're compared to the Salamandra, which is a creature that is born from fire, and its whole mitzios is fire. As opposed to the Rekonin Shabbat, the Poshi Yisrael that we're talking about over here, the Torah is not necessarily their home mitzvahs, but it's on top of them, it's superficial above them, like the plating on the Mizbeach HaZahav, and nevertheless it has the ability, as Rish Lakish is saying, to save them from the fire of Gehenna. So therefore, if you were going to say that Jewish Poshi Yisrael wind up in Gehenna long term, and you're going to say they don't do tshuva over there, then what about the Shlokish saying they don't end up in Gehenna in the first place? So therefore, it must be that we have to distinguish between Jewish Poshim and Goyish ones. So the Goyish ones never do tshuva, the Jewish ones do. Well, if we're saying they do wind up in Gehenna, the Elo ha'adichtim, oyri be'ema kabocha mayin yishisu, what about we just douse in the pasuk before to say that the people who go into Gehenna, they do cry out over there and they recognize the justice of what Hashem did. So that's talking about Jews, therefore. So you see that Jews do go into Gehenna. The answer is Ahud Mechaibid Dinid Gehenna Chodoshaita. The answer is yes, they are chayim to be in Gehenna for just a short time. But also Avraham, Masik Lahu. Avraham then gets a hold of them and receives them and schleps them out of Gehenna. So they're only there. So in other words, Marashah says, actually, as soon as they come into Gehenna and they right away are Matzik Alein Asadin, they justify Hashem's justice against them for that schus itself, Avraham Avinu saved them from Gehenna. Levar Yisrael Haba Knanis. With the exception of a Jew who has relations with a goita, or a Jew who stretches the skin to conceal his bris mila. So in both of those cases, they're being machalo, they're bris mila. Then v'loy mevashkole. So then Avraham does not recognize him. So then Avraham does not recognize him as a yid, and then he might stay in Gehenna longer. Or it might be Moshech Bar Losse, might not be the second type person who does that, but rather saying that his Orla gets extended, and therefore Avraham, so to speak, doesn't recognize him as a Yid because he doesn't have the Ois Bris Kodesh of Bris Mila. There's a Zoyar or something that says that actually what it is you have Rachman al Tzlan, you have babies who pass away before they have a Bris Mila. So to speak, you know, they have their Orla, you have the Minag is that they give them a Bris Mila before they're buried, but still sometimes it happens, you can't do that for whatever reason. So to speak, those Orlas are available to be attached to such a person. So then Avraham doesn't recognize them, and then he doesn't take them out, and then he doesn't take them out of Gehenna. But otherwise he does. There's a different medrash that phrases it differently. Avraham stands by the entrance of Gehenna, and anybody who has a bris milah and has kept it, then has kept the kedusha of it, then Avraham won't let him into Gehenna in the first place. However, Maski for Rav Kahana says that you have to ask in general, what were you saying before? You were saying that Haposhim be the pasuk from the last pasuk in Yeshaya, you were saying it means that now they're Poshea. And therefore, you're forced to say that that refers to Goyim, because Jews, once they come into Gehenna, are not Poshea anymore. But Rav Kahana says, Hashtid Amar to Poshim to Pashti Vazli, you're saying that Haposhim means that they're still being Poshea even now. And from that, you're learning that even when they were Gehenna in Gehenna, they're still Shaposhim Vahochim Olam and Ainur Chosim Betruva. But why? Pashti Vazlu, Elamayata, by that point. By that logic, you're going to say that anytime you have a verb like that, that's phrased in the present tense, then it means that you're going to say it means that that now it's taking place. It says in the pasuk Hamotzi Eschem Eretz Mitzrayim, Hashem takes you out of Eretz Mitzrayim, V'hamala, or Hashem brings you up from Eretz Mitzrayim, D'mapiku D'masiku. Does it mean that Hashem is right now bringing us out of Mitzrayim and bringing us up from Mitzrayim? No, that all D'apiku D'asiku means Hashem did it in the past. Hochinami D'pashihu, the same way Hapushim B does not necessarily mean that right now they're being Poshea. You could say, after all, it is talking about people who were Poshea in the past. Maybe they're not being Poshea now, but nevertheless, they still have that long-term punishment in Gehenna, where Yeshaya is saying over there that they're going to see Kiselata Moisamos and so on and so forth. But not necessarily if they're Poshea right now. Maybe in fact they do tshuva, but they still need to have a long-term stay in Gehenna. We could still say that it is talking about Goyim, but we don't necessarily need to say that it means that Afilo Apis for Shul Gehenna Menim Chozim. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. What is today? Vav Tammuz. We talk about Torah Chadosh Me'iti Tetzi, that there's going to be a new Torah coming from Hashem, coming down here from Earth. So particularly, we're going to down here to Earth. Particularly, we're going to see that stressed with the Torah Chadosh being revealed by Melech HaMashiach. Because after all, Melech HaMashiach is, as the Rambam describes, a Navi Gadol. He's going to be a great Navi and even wiser than Shlomo HaChacham Mikol Adam, and therefore he's going to teach all the people. So that means this Torah Chadosh is going to be revealed by him, is going to be in a way of Nevuah, and it's going to be then brought down from Nevuah into Chochmah, boss of Adam, and from there it's going to be taught to the whole Jewish people. Halacha. We started on the halachas of doing business with Dover HaOsur. So we said you're not allowed to make a regular business out of Dover HaOsur, even if it's Mutar B'Hana, of things that are regularly eaten. So if a person happened to get a hold of a Dover HaOsur, and let's say he's catching fish and he happened to catch a non-kosher fish, or he happened to have an animal in his house that died and is Nevela or Trefa, he's allowed to sell those. But he does have to sell them right away. He shouldn't, for example, wait until it becomes fatter by him. Obviously, that wouldn't apply by the Nevela or Trefa, but let's say he happened to get a hold of a non-kosher animal. He can't fatten it up first before selling it. He could sell it even though the shliach, the middleman, is going to earn money through it. But not that he should sell it to the shliach, because then the shliach would be doing schoda with it, and you can't do that either. So you can have a broker to arrange the sale, and he'll get a commission, but not to actually sell it to him, and then he'll resell it to somebody else. By the same token, you also, for example, you're allowed to collect. If you have a debt by a goy, if he wants to give you a dover tome, you're allowed to collect that for the debt. But again, you have to sell it right away. You can't keep it in order to earn a profit on it. You can keep it long enough that you won't lose the keren, that you won't lose the principal, but not longer than that. I'm kind of a man.